Welcome, welcome everyone. My name is Sean, and today we're going to talk about how I made the people at the Majority Report very, very angry, very, very upset, very, very not very happy, not very well, and I've already lost the plot on this video with how many varies that I said, but we're going to get into it, we're going to talk about it, we're going to laugh about it, we're going to enjoy ourselves, but before we do, I want to thank everybody who signed up over on actualjusticewarrior.com/join.
Give me the money. Give me the money, okay?
Remind you that on Saturday, April 27th in Austin, Texas, I will be at the Vulcan Gas Company for MindsFest. Link to tickets, top of the description, promo code AJW for 20% off.
D-Wax Shellac says, have you guys seen Sean Actual Justice Warrior's take on Emma's views on crime and squatting? I do think his take on Emma and Bender having a glib take on crime has a point.
So right off the bat, at the top of this video, you have a comment from one of their members, I'm assuming this is from the member show, where they're asking them if they saw my video, actually videos, about them talking about squatting and talking about crime, and unfortunately for them, their own viewer realized that I made solid points in that video, and this is going to make them very not happy, because you're about to see the fire come from behind the camera, and I have never seen a more brave man from behind the camera to talk about how I'm a bad person. Just look at the energy that they're leading off with.
But I would like to see a debate or at least a rebuttal, but I do realize he might be cloud jumping. I don't care.
The stupid asshole who thought the George Floyd effect was... No, he's a moron. You should be embarrassed for thinking he had a point. And if you want us to respond to it, you should elaborate and tell us what his point is instead of making us watch that fucking moron.
Yeah.
Whoa. Maddie from behind the scenes, mind your manners. What's wrong with you? You kissed your mother with that mouth? Absolutely ridiculous and over the top. Also, he mentions the George Floyd effect. He's like, oh no, he thinks that crime started spiking after George Floyd, which we will address later with facts and numbers and data and how I'm 100% right and how this buffoon is dead wrong. But oh, how dare you expect them to actually seek out information and react to it? You should have summarized the entire points of my two videos that are over an hour long in your message if you want them to respond to it. Now, I just want to put this out there for you guys. They're making the case that they saw neither of my videos. They're unaware of them, but they're going to proceed throughout the course of this video to mention points from my videos that they didn't see. But just remember, they're very, very bad person, this guy, for daring to bring me up to them. How dare they?
I mean, in the end, am I glib on occasion? Yes.
You know what's glib is to say, like some people did, that... this sort of retail theft ring thing has nothing to do with want and privation, as maybe somebody Actual Justice Warrior is a fan of said, when we know that the people that are actually doing the boosting for retail thefts, those videos that apparently some people like to play for YouTube revenue, that those people doing that are almost like 9 in 10 doing so to support addictions. So I don't think we're the ones being glib. I think some other people are being really glib, and I think, like, keep pushing us.
So first of all, I absolutely love the optics of Emma looking awkwardly off into the distance while the producer from behind the camera is telling people to keep pushing them and saying, listen, these people that are committing all these different thefts, 9 out of 10 of them are drug addicts committing these thefts. Now, I just want to point out that these people were denying that there was a problem with retail theft in the first place. They also blame poverty all the time, but that's not really the issue at hand. The fact of the matter is they are stealing from these places. Businesses are shutting down due to theft. Yes, there are other factors involved. For instance, higher interest rates make it more difficult to get money, so all these businesses are already stressed due to economic conditions, but the theft obviously doesn't help, and this is creating problems through our society. And being addicted to drugs, I guess maybe in the Majority Report they feel differently, but I think you don't get to commit crimes because you're addicted to drugs. I think that's not reasonable. On top of that, I will point out that me and the person that I am a fan of, that one person that they're not naming here, even though they'll name her later, are under the opinion, or if I can speak for both of us, because apparently this is what I have to do, that you should put people in treatment and you shouldn't give people the option when they're committing crimes to not go to treatment because they are sick. Addicts do have problems. We should try to help them. But sometimes you have to compel people who refuse to help themselves rather than just let them commit crime after crime after crime because you feel so sad for them. You can't just arrest addiction. You can't just arrest poverty. You actually have to deal with the people and the actions that they're engaging in.
Well, I mean, I just like the idea of it. I'm going to be glib about claims about crime, given the
hysterical
fact that crime is down substantially, and that's not being represented in the coverage of crime nationally. So, I don't know what the claim is, but the reaction that I have to that is just basically, I do think that these crime warriors are deserving of mockery because they're not able to actually reckon with the data that we're dealing with.
So here we have Emma stumbling and bumbling through her rebuttal about how, oh, you don't understand. We know the data. We understand the numbers related to crime, and all these people that are concerned with criminality, they just don't get it because crime actually down. Now, of course, my follow-up question, because I would like to get past level zero of the conversation, is down compared to what? Down compared to what? That's what I want you guys to be able to answer, because I'm not saying crime is the worst that it's ever been. I'm not saying that crime isn't down in comparison to the 1990s, which will be brought up unbelievably throughout the course of this video. What I am saying is that from 2019, before the pandemic, before the Black Lives Matter riots, we have not returned to those levels. That's what I've been saying. That's what I told Emma to her face when we were on the Culture War show.
By every metric.
Down compared to what?
Down compared to 2021 and 2022.
Don't change the subject.
You accused us of publishing videos we don't publish.
If it's down in 20 compared to 2021 and there was a giant year-over-year increase from 2020 to 2021... then you're talking about something that's
down. It
wasn't
giant. It was a small bump from the pandemic.
A 47% increase in homicide in the city of New York is not a small bump.
Homicides have been on a precipitous decline since the 70s, since the 80s, since the 90s. There was a bump because of desperation in the pandemic, and now it's back down in 2023. So, that's irrefutable. That's the NYPD's own data. That's on all major crimes. Murders, rapes, grand larcenies, robberies.
This is an argument I'm often confronted with, and it's actually pretty terrible. So crime is down from the peak, for sure, right? In some years in New York City, we had 2,100 murders. I think that's the largest ever in the history of the city of New York. However, my standard it's not as bad as the worst time in the history of the city of New York. When I see murders jump year over year from about 319 to 469.
What do you mean year over year? The 2 years that I just listed?
Year over year, as in from 2020 to 2021. That would be a year over year increase. That is a dramatic increase, and it's the largest since, I believe, 2010. The greatest year over year increase of all time in the city of New York, by the way. But it's all the way back to 2010 numbers.
It's down.
Yeah, it's down compared to the increase, but it's not down compared to 2019.
That's something that I mentioned to Sam Cedar when I was on the Majority Report. It's the simplest thing that you can actually address if you're actually interested in engaging with the conversation. But instead, we get crime down compared to the worst period of time in American history, and you shouldn't worry about it because it's not as bad as it is in the worst period of time in American history.
Which is that, yes, there was a spike in crime in 2021 and 2022 in the wake of the pandemic when people were desperate, and the crime that occurred after that was correlated. But we also have seen a steep drop in all kinds of violent crime and crime in general since the 80s. It's been on a decline. There was a brief 2-year pick back up, and now we are down once again by every single metric, whether it be violent crime, shoplifting, theft. Nationally, the United States is on a crime decline, and I don't understand how you can cover crime as this, you know, actual crime justice warrior says, cop mouthpiece. Right.
You guys thought I was kidding. You guys thought I was joking that at this point in time, this late in the game, they're talking about crime being down compared to the highest point in history. Now, she said the 80s right there. Typically, these people say the 90s. It's a distinction without a difference at this point in time based on the fact that they don't know anything. So that's not really the relevant portion. But yeah, the issue is, crime spiked, it went up dramatically, And it's gone down since the spike, but we're still elevated from the pre-spike levels. Do you understand? Can you follow what I'm saying? Do you understand the words that are coming out of my face? So when you're like, I don't understand how people like the crime warrior, which by the way, I actually like that name a lot. That might be on a new t-shirt in the future. I know they're trying to say it in a way to like disparage me. Like, we don't even know this guy's channel name. I got where you're going with this. But the reason I'm covering it this way is because that's what I'm interested in, is the fact that it spiked. I'd like it to go back down to pre-2020 levels. That's what I would like to happen, for it to go down before 2020. I can remember a time before the year 2020 that I would like to return to in terms of the numbers, because that's a significant problem. When you have a dramatic spike in homicide, like the largest of all time in 2020 of 30%, you follow that with another increase in homicide, and then you have drops after those dramatic increases, and you're still elevated. That's what I'm concerned about. That's what I'm discussing. That's what I'm highlighting. I never once said that crime is the worst that it's ever been. My standard is not the worst that it's ever been. This is essentially like saying if somebody was killed in an anti-Semitic attack, that's perfectly fine. It's not a big deal, because at least it's not the Holocaust. That was the most anti-Semitic attack. Therefore, the thing that you're talking about now, no big deal, because it's not the worst that it's ever been. Great argument, Emma. Really, really well put forward. I can't believe I'm still explaining this. I can't believe I actually legitimately explained this in person to somebody, and they still don't get it. They still don't understand. They still can't address the point.
Actual cop mouthpiece.
Right. Like, how that can't be central to your coverage if you're covering it honestly. So
he's just, I mean, him and the people who are fans of them are just recycling police talking points, and whether they want to roll their eyes at a term like copaganda or not, the fits.
So first of all, Matt, calm down. Relax. And yes, I will roll my eyes at the term copaganda, because it's stupid. You can say police propaganda. It's fine. You can use adult words. You don't need your catchy internet jargon that people don't talk like in the real world. But I'm not a mouthpiece for police talking points. In fact, we address a lot of times whenever we're quoting a police union rep that these people have built-in incentives in order to maximize the benefits for the officers and limit accountability. But what I'm engaging in is a discussion about reality. You guys don't even bother to frame the discussion or what I said in its actual context, because you know you can't address it. That's why you're trying to pretend that I'm making the claim that crime is the worst that it's ever been, when I am fully aware that it's not as bad as it's ever been. In fact, this is the joke talking point that I make fun of people for using in response to the recent spike in crime, the thing that I'm actually talking about.
Here's a Sunday Times correspondent, Louis Callahan, traveled on New York Times for 24 hours to find out how dangerous it really is. Let's play this.
It's 9 a.m. I'm 2 hours into my 24-hour subway ride. I'm at Grand Central Station, which is full of commuters, people going to work, people coming back from work after the night shift. And really, like, the whole of New York is here. The subway's a great leveler. My friend has just bought me a sandwich.
So I absolutely love this, because they just talked about how I'm not reckoning with the data properly, how I won't engage in the numbers. And, you know, we just serve up anecdotes to you guys out there in the audience rather than actually engage with the real, true, honest, genuine facts on the ground. And then they play this UK reporter riding on the subway for 24 hours in one day, and they're going to actually make the argument that because no crime happened to her, therefore, there's no problem in the subway. Nothing to worry about. This is the ultimate anecdote that you could put forward, but apparently this is good enough. Me talking about the data on subway crime, which I will get into in just a moment, this is wrong. How dare you? Look at British lady. British lady, she rode the subway for a full day and no crime happened to her.
I'm tired, heading home for the day. All right, it's 11 o'clock. I'm in Grand Central. I've got a burger.
I think we kind of get the point.
She was not assaulted.
She was killed 5 seconds later.
Oh, gosh. Good, you cut it off. We don't want to show that.
No, but she made an observation that it's the people who never ride this thing that are the most afraid of it, and the people that ride it every day, which is also, guess what? Guess who lives in New York? We do.
Yes, people that live in New York and take public transit every day.
Guess who said enjoy the National Guard in your subways? People who don't live here.
You thought I was kidding, right? They actually say no crime happened to this lady. therefore Subway is safe. And, you know, she made the observation that it's the people who don't live in New York City that are the ones that are worried about criminality. And they live in New York City, so that's a big own against all of you people who just don't understand the subway system, except for the fact that I also live in New York City. Except for the fact that I also have to use the mass transit. Well, I don't actually have to use it because, you know, I work from home, but the fiance has to use the mass transit. They gotta use the subway. This is a thing that people I know and I've done it before when I actually did have to commute, have to deal with. So it's like, oh, well, these people don't live in New York City. This actual crime warrior guy, he must live all the way out in New York City. That's where I live. Yeah. I'm aware of what's going on.
Incredibly low number of crimes that are taking place here. So one per about a million rides.
Now, I also want to highlight that this lady said somewhere throughout the course of this video that only one crime per million people happens in the subway. That's actually one felony per million riders, I believe, is what they're trying to say. That's the argument they're trying to put forward. But the thing is, comparing crimes to ridership is not a useful metric. Why don't we compare subway crime to subway crime in previous years? For instance, even though this woman wasn't killed, even though those people at the Majority Report want you to know that this woman, she didn't die. She's not dead. She's alive. She was perfectly fine in her one-day anecdotal experience in the subway. More people have been killed since 2020 in the subway than the previous 15 years. So by the numbers, the subway is more deadly in the previous 4 years previous 4 years than 15 years. And for those of you who are confused over the Majority Report, 15 is bigger number than four. So what that means, mathematically speaking, obviously, is that crime up in the subway, not down, up in the subway, higher in the subway, more deadly, more dangerous.
Incredibly low number of crimes that are taking place here. So one per about a million rides.
Now, I know that if you compare all those people who died in the subway to the number of daily rioters, that actually is a very small number. But if you want to make that number even smaller, you can compare it to all the people in New York State, the ones who did and didn't ride the subway. And that will also be even smaller. But you can also compare it to all the people in the entire country who also didn't ride the subway, some who did. And again, you will make that number smaller because very few people, when you compare to all the humans on planet Earth, actually die in the New York City subway. Now, does that make a relevant metric when you're comparing like for like and you realize that, yes, it is more deadly in the last 4 years compared to the 15 years? Absolutely not. But for some reason, these are the arguments that are put forward. Expand the denominator, statistical manipulation, basic one that you should look out for, in order to hide the increase in crime. That's exactly what you're engaging in. And again, you should probably try to address the point. Maybe that's something that you should be concerned with.
And even Eric Adams admitted in the Breakfast Club interrogation.
He ran away from it.
By Olayemi that New York, he says on one side of his mouth that New York City is like is the safest it's ever been, but also we need cops in the subways because people feel better about cops being there, even though crime is down. But when she pressed him on it, the people that he's listening to are not the people that are not necessarily representative of some communities. It's usually people that are in Manhattan as opposed to the other boroughs.
So here's a point of agreement that I actually have with the folks over at the Majority Report. Eric Adams was talking out of both sides of his mouth, however, not in the way that they say that he was. So Eric Adams ran on the issue of crime. Crime is obviously a big issue in New York City politics at this very moment in time, but he's also trying to say that he's doing a good job on crime. So he's saying compared to when he took office, it fell, and he's trying to take all the credit for it. This is the discrepancies in his particular statement. On top of that, while New York City is still technically the safest big city in the entire country, that is because we've seen similar crime spikes in other cities across the nation. But when you compare New York to previous years of New York, crime is elevated. That's what we're talking about in the context of New York City. Now, I also want to point out that Eric Adams was just wrong when he said crime was down. He was going off the preliminary numbers that are the numbers that Emma tried throwing out during the appearance on the Culture War episode. And it turns out, like I said on the Majority Report, the revised numbers come out later. They came out in April of this year, and they showed that crime was up in the seven major categories combined, although they were down notably in most of those categories. Assaults was the big driver of the major crime category where they were up, Also very notable and not included in the major categories grouping is shootings, which were down 26% from 2022, but are still up 50% from 2019. Again, the important question when people are telling you crime is down compared to what? But of course, another statistical manipulation is about to come up from the majority report where they decide that they want to pivot to national numbers.
And we all, I just, let's put this up there so that there's no ambiguity that I just sent. The crime rate and what the FBI data shows. The FBI and law enforcement are not incentivized to portray crime as down, by the way. They have every disincentive to do so. So based on that kind of standard and also their past consistency on reporting this accurately for the most part, I'm fine with using the FBI data as the source for national crime rates. Let's scroll down. New FBI data confirms previous indications that crime in the U.S. declined significantly in 2023, continuing a post-pandemic trend.
And just to reference, sorry to cut you off, but just to reference our buddy, the actual Justice Warrior, it doesn't say the post-George Floyd effect trend. It says the post-pandemic trend.
So I love the fact that Matty is so smug about his proof, his evidence, that it has nothing to do with the effects of the Black Lives Matter riots, with the effects of George Floyd, or anything like that, because this line in this article said, post-pandemic crime spike, and you're just an idiot if you don't believe this sentence in the mainstream media article. I mean, this line right here, definitely 100% provable, therefore George Floyd effect completely debunked, completely destroyed because of this line right here. Now, I will point out that, you know, even though that's a devastating counter-argument to me, and I don't know how I'm going to be able to overwhelm it, that we actually do have a weekly chart that compares a set period of time in terms of homicides in the United States of America that covers both the pandemic and both the post-George Floyd effect that I've often showed on this channel, and it looks something like this. Now, I don't know if you guys understand this chart. Maybe it needs to be explained very slowly for Maddie behind the camera, but that, like, red translucent portion of it on one side of the chart, that happens to be the pandemic period, the lockdowns, you know, stay-at-home orders and all that, and one of the things that you could see is that crime actually was going down in that period of time. And it was quite similar to previous years, nowhere near the dramatic spike that we saw. But then there's a solid red line right there. And that's actually the week that George Floyd died. That would be the week that he was killed. And all of a sudden, the homicide just shot up dramatically. It's almost as if, and I know this might sound crazy, the data shows, even to the very week, that George Floyd's death is what precipitated the dramatic increase in homicide. It's almost as if even this one article in the mainstream media article that says post-pandemic crime spike that totally disproves everything actually conflicts with the data. It's you could see the numbers right there. Now look, as I said during the course of my discussion with Sam Cedar on this particular topic, the pandemic played some role in the increase in crime. Obviously, it was a majorly disruptive event. I'm not saying it had zero impact. But when you look at the charts, when you follow the week to week, the catalyst for the increase in crime, the thing that is the most notable, the date that led to the change in our country, that led to this dramatic increase in homicide, again, the greatest year-over-year increase in homicide in the history of the nation by percentage, was the death of George Floyd, to the very week. You can see it right there. Now, you guys might think that I pulled this from some white nationalist source. It actually comes from Vox. Even Vox acknowledges this. On top of that, other places that actually released a bunch of inmates that they probably shouldn't have released due to precautions from the pandemic saw little spikes in crime before that. That was an issue for sure. That definitely had an impact as well. And again, there were definite consequences of the lockdowns that people, like everybody at the Majority Report, advocated for, and other things like that, that definitely also led to increased agitation and increased levels in crime. So it is a mixture of factors, but obviously the inciting incident is George Floyd, according to the data. Now, I know you got a line from an article, but I got this fancy chart right here, and chart beats sentence from mainstream media article every day and twice on Sunday.
But just to reference our buddy, the actual Justice Warrior, it doesn't say the post George Floyd effect trend. It says the post pandemic trend.
Right.
So like, how it's fucking it's fucking embarrassing, frankly. And I'll just say it. Anna retweets that guy. It's fucking embarrassing.
I can't believe that Anna retweets that guy. Oh, horrible, horrible. What are we in third grade right now? We're talking about retweeting other people? Now, to be clear, I don't know what exactly they're referring to in terms of the retweet. The last engagement that I had with Anna was actually a campaign to raise money for a 9-year-old girl who was slain in Chicago during a shooting where I believe the family was mistaken as a rival gang. About 9 members of the family were wounded in that particular shooting, and Anna didn't want to cover it because dorks like these people shamed her out of it because they misinterpreted her original tweet as a tweet about black crime. So I decided to use my channel to raise money for that family in Anna's name, which, by the way, you guys doubled up the fundraiser, and I am so honored that I have you guys out there in my audience. Thank you so much for what you contributed. And the fact is, Anna was grateful for that. Like, it was a nice thing. So how dare you, Anna, you absolute horrible person. Shame on you for retweeting a fundraiser that doubled the funding for a family that lost their 9-year-old girl that was done in your name because you inspired through your passion on the story for people to look into it. How dare you?
So the new fourth quarter numbers showed a 13% decline in murder in 2023 from 2022, a 6% decline in reported violent crime, and a 4% decline in reported property crime. Can we put this up? That's based on data from around 13,000 law enforcement agencies policing about 82% of the U.S. population that provided the FBI with data through December. We'll see those final numbers in October once they get the full data.
So one of the things that I find absolutely hilarious is when people decide to stop reading an article, because this was the source that the Majority Report had put forward for their own audience to say crime down. And remember that one line that said post-pandemic debunks everything, including the chart right there. And if you read the article, they actually attribute some of the crime increase to understaffing and underfunding of police departments. It's right here. You see the line where Emma stopped reading, where it says the October we'll get the numbers. Right after that, it says Asher and other experts say the biggest factor behind the drop in crime may simply be the resumption of anti-crime initiatives by local governments and courts that had stopped during the pandemic. Quote, after a terrible period of underfunding and understaffing caused by the pandemic, local governments have, by most measures, returned to pre-pandemic levels. Now, it also talks about understaffing, under-engagement with the police, and then it goes on to say, quote, the tools that we ordinarily used to interrupt these cycles of violence were gone in 2020 and 2021. Now look, declines from the dramatic spike that people like the Majority Report are in complete denial about are a good thing. In fact, even in the New York City numbers that I talk about, even though we had a 47% increase in homicide, which then went up in the following year, we are starting to come back down in terms of homicide, and that's absolutely wonderful. That is a good thing. But of course, we're still elevated from those pre-George Floyd levels. It's just a fact that Emma and the whole Majority Report are in denial of. They want to obfuscate no matter what. However, I also want to highlight one thing that Emma said, because it's absolutely crucial, and that is the notion of reported crime and talking about the 13,000 police agencies, because that sounds really impressive without additional context, but here on this channel, we provide you additional context.
That's based on data from around 13,000 law enforcement agencies.
So as we talked about previously on this channel, we actually do have issues with the FBI reporting data that, of course, are not addressed by Emma Vigeland or anybody at the Majority Report, and that includes a steep decline in the number of agencies reporting. Now, remember, Emma cited 13,000 as if that number, because it sounds large on its own, is sufficient, but as you can see from the 2022 numbers, you actually had 15,726 agencies submitting data for that year. So again, on its own, without context, which is the gray area that the Majority Report loves to live in, 13,000, big number, but it's actually down significantly, down almost 3,000 agencies, again, according from their count to the 2022 count. And there's also something else that's incredibly crucial about this data set. You see, right at the top, you can see that the Uniform Crime Report from the FBI comes from two sources in 2022. Those sources are the Summary Reporting System and the National Incident-Based Reporting System, which is called the NIBR PRS. Now, for those of you who are strangers to this channel, which you might not be aware of, is we're actually transitioning from SRS-based data to the National Incident-Based Reporting System data. And in fact, in 2023, we only had National Incident-Based Reporting data in our system. This probably is one of the reasons why so many other law enforcement agencies decided not to participate, because government bureaucracies are often slow moving and whatnot. But the overall point that I'm making, and is not acknowledged by the majority report, is that even though we're still looking at reported crimes in both of these years, we're using different methodologies in order to gather the data of said reported crimes. And we're not doing anything, as far as I can tell, to normalize the way the UCR used to work to the way that it's going to work going forward. Now, on its own, I'm not saying that the National Incident-Based Reporting System is less accurate than the SRS or more accurate. The point I'm trying to make is that it's different. It's a different way of collecting data. And we're actually seeing some very interesting anomalies when we compare this new way of gathering reporting data to the victimization surveys, because the gold standard for measuring crime is the National Crime Victimization Survey. And in this year, 2022, the year that we saw the crime start to go down, we actually saw one of the greatest disparities between the reported data, again, gathered in a completely different method, and the survey data. So as you can see right here, the Uniform Crime Report, which gathers data from the sources that we just described, actually reported a 2% decline in violent crime. Nothing significant, but still a decline, and that's positive. But by contrast, we actually saw a 75% increase in crime according to the National Crime Victimization Survey. Now, for homicides, we only have data from the UCR because people who are victimized by homicides tend to be really crap at filling out surveys. But as you can see, for rape, we had down 6% versus up 58%. For robbery, we have up 1% versus the victimization survey saying that it's up 47%. And for aggravated assault, we have down 2% versus the survey data showing us that we're up 104%. Now, the reason that this is incredibly notable is that this is actually one of the largest gaps ever recorded between the National Victimization Survey percentages and the reporting data percentages. And this is disastrous when you're pivoting over to a new system for the reporting data, and the gaps between that and the more accurate victimization survey data ends up widening, not narrowing. So there obviously needs to be some tweaks made in the data. And by the way, I will link this article in the description for you guys, because one of the things that they say is a big contributing factor in the gap is the fact that we have such a decline in reported crime across the country. So in 2021, we actually saw a 52% reporting rate of serious violent crimes compared to a 48% reporting rate in 2022. Now, this is a relative decrease of 8%. The decline in reporting crimes to police was particularly large for the crime of aggravated assault, falling from 61% in 2021 to 50% in 2022, a relative decrease of 18%, and that makes a lot of sense when you look at the big divergence in that particular category between the victimization survey, which again captures reported and unreported crimes, versus the police data presented in the Uniform Crime Report. Now look, I understand that I'm using a lot of words and sentences, and it might be confusing for people who begin and end their thought process on crime with crime down since 1990s, crime lower than in 1990s, very high, crime down compared to that. But trust me, this is absolutely crucial when you're interpreting the data, especially when you have somebody go out of their way to justify the data without any understanding of the change in collection method.
So
also, the left is right about crime and should be listened to and not maybe pathologized by leading people in the media about it.
So, yeah. There we go.
The gall to be accused of not caring and being glib. I resent that. I actually know people who work retail and stuff like that, and I care about what is driving those incidents that, again, we know are inflated by the retailers themselves and the police departments themselves.
So let me say this without any ambiguity. You do not care at all whatsoever about the people who have to deal with crime. Even what you said right now is proof positive to that, and I don't care that you know somebody who works in a store However, that somehow becomes relevant to the conversation, because in New York City, where you live, where I live as well, by the way, we have seen, since the Black Lives Matter riots, a 77% increase in retail theft. This is a chart from John Jay College of Criminal Justice. And as you can see, this chart actually goes all the way back to the Great Recession times, and there was no similar increase during that period of time. Because what's actually driving this, what's actually enabling the criminals, is policy, changes in the criminal justice policy to be particular, bail reform to be particular, because again, the same 300 people are responsible for approximately 30% of all the retail theft arrests in the city of New York, not actually poverty. So what you would want to do is get those repeat offenders off the streets, these people who often turn violent when they're confronted by store employees who are just sick of this nonsense, but you don't care to actually address that. You just want to say, the left is right about crime, and it's being inflated by the police and by the retailers. It's all lies. Ignore your lying eyes. Pretend that the stores aren't closing in front of you, because it's just corporate greed that's putting stuff behind glass, because gosh, aren't corporations so cruel? Again, the data is clear and obvious, and if you're going to argue that it's being inflated, please tell me how they're getting away with inflating it this dramatically. Please explain that one to me, Maddie from behind the camera. Now, they go on into this whole side quest about male loneliness and how the right's wrong on that, and honestly, not interested in it. You can watch the full video linked in the description. We're trying to stay on topic, ignore their pivots. I don't want to talk about feminism or Andrew Tate or any of that stupid nonsense at this moment in time. The topic is crime. Criminality. And let's get back to that.
Say what the at least for me, I think my analysis of crime, the implication is that I'm a privileged white girl that doesn't understand things. And like, I've never hidden the fact that like my parents were lawyers and I had a comfortable upbringing growing up in New Jersey. Is something I'm constantly conscious of. I don't necessarily think that it infringes on my coverage here in any real way.
No, because lots of people views about crime like the ones that we're criticizing right now.
Well, that's typically what I mean. I've seen it's not a coincidence that the actual crime warriors' opinions on crime are very similar to the stuff that you hear from wealthy boomers that I've had conversations with in Bridge and Tunnelers and Long Island and New Jersey. Yeah.
So Emma says, listen, I'm not somebody who's ever tried to hide or obfuscate my wealth and how I grew up so privileged and all of that, and how my family are two U.S. attorneys and I went to a $40,000 a year private elementary school, even though at the same time she's attacking what she calls Bridge and Tunnelers, which are known as commuters, people who can't afford to live in New York City, and says that my opinions are the opinions of the wealthy property owners and whatnot, and it's no coincidence that I hold those opinions because I guess I own some property or something like that.
It's property owners and wealthy people who basically make those arguments, and we're trying to be representative of the advocates that we've had on this program, including one we'll have on tomorrow, who do the on the ground work and have some prescriptions on it based on data.
But yeah, Emma, you're wrong. You have what are called luxury beliefs, the beliefs that are popular in elite left-wing circles that are totally disconnected from reality, and this isn't something that we can argue about, and it's just my opinion versus your opinion. It's actually supported by the factual data. If you look at who voted for Eric Adams in the Democratic primary, you will find out that Black and Hispanic neighborhoods that are disproportionately poor, that are disproportionately impacted by violent crime, voted overwhelmingly for Eric Adams because they want to change, because they actually experience the consequences of your luxury beliefs. The left-wing candidates, they were more popular in Manhattan, in the wealthy neighborhoods, in the circles that you've run in your whole entire life, because they don't experience the criminality in the same way that other people experience it. So yeah, you're just incorrect on this. I mean, just look at all the different celebrities. John Legend was out there defending bail reform the other day because this is the popular gauche celebrity position.
It's property owners and wealthy people who basically make those arguments.
No, look, I want to make this clear because one of the things I can't stand is people trying to maximize their struggle or overstate their level of poverty growing up. That even though there were periods of time in my life where I would consider myself broke, I never considered myself to be in poverty. But since these people are trying to call me out, saying that I come from this wealthy background while they're trying to downplay their own personal backgrounds, let's just set the record straight on this. My parents got divorced when I was a kid. My mother, because she had no money, because she wanted to pursue her education, had to move in with my aunt and uncle. We ended up living in a basement apartment in their place for a while as she got her life together, and she was able to do so thanks to the kindness and grace of my relatives, because Puerto Rican families tend to stick together. It's one of the great things about Hispanic cultures. Now look, there were definitely struggles and whatnot, but I never considered myself poor, even when we didn't live in the best neighborhood, even when we struggled or anything like that, because what my mother and my aunt actually went through was legitimate poverty. They had a father die when my mother was 13. Their mother was a drug addict at one point in time during their childhood. An innocent angel Aladdin who was trying to feed his starving family actually set their place on fire, and because of that, they had to move out of their already crappy apartment to even crappier projects, because that was the option that they had after a crackhead set their place on fire. Now, I'm sure that guy was an innocent angel as well, and he's struggling with addiction, and he should just be allowed to set places on fire and potentially kill my mother and my aunt when they were children, but trust me, it was not a good look, and my mother ended up getting out of that situation by joining the military, which is something that a lot of broke families tend to do. Now, one of the reasons why I reject whole cloth the idea that I grew up in poverty is because the things that I experienced pale in comparison to the things that my mother experienced, to the generations before me, what they actually went through. But the reason I'm correct has nothing to do with any of that. The reason I'm correct is because what I'm saying is true, regardless of the background of the person who's saying it. If they agreed with me, that would be true. If they agree with the majority report dorks, that would be false, because what they're saying is nonsense.
And also, well, I've said a name, Jenk should not imply that people are on the take from some sort of shadowy defund organization to undercut the work of these people. That was also a disgusting thing, and I'm tired of biting my tongue on this.
Now, they get mad at Jenk for implying that there's big money behind this kind of movement. I mean, there is. There's giant Hollywood celebrities. I mean, obviously, people get all edgy and antsy about the fact that George Soros' organizations fund a lot of these district attorneys, but yeah, there is big money behind this. I mean, Kim Kardashian is one of the spokespeople for the Innocence Project. That is not something that comes cheaply. It's one of the most funded organizations in the criminal justice realm that there is. And by the way, we've talked about in the past how that organization had bought off CPAC specifically, and they endorse obviously guilty people and the campaigns to free them. So yeah, there is big money behind that. It is just a fact.
The one thing I'll say about that, too, in the context of the crime aspect, is like you were saying, Emma, you turn on Eyewitness News, the first five stories are a baby was thrown out a window, or a car was broken into, or someone shot at a bodega. And as you're saying, every single one of those individual instances, not only are they horrible, but they destroy people's lives, and they atomize people. But at the same time, to act as if there are no structural solutions to those problems is actually ceding any sort of ground that we can make up to others. There are structural ways to deal with that involve actually improving people's lives and not immiserating them. They are more connected than anyone would like to think, and actually making those connections, i.e., you know, why most so many people have to pay for cars.
So they have somebody else's voice coming in right here, and he's talking about how there are structural solutions and whatnot to these problems, and I don't disagree with that. In fact, usually when I highlight a specific anecdote, I like to trace it back to a specific policy, because what I'm trying to do is produce policy change. But sometimes a human element, a story that is representative of that policy failure, is the thing that will push for the change. But did you notice that this guy said, oh, why should these people even have to pay for cars?
There are structural ways to deal with that involve actually improving people's lives and not immiserating them. They are more connected than anyone would like to think, and actually making those connections, i.e., you know, why most so many people have to pay for cars, why so many people have to struggle for housing, why so many people have to be this poor and immiserated in their societies, is what leads to these individual circumstances that people want to mention on the local news.
Is this guy doing a Jessica Burbank where people are stealing cars because they can't afford cars and they need them to get groceries?
Why are we seeing an increase in carjackings? I mean, we saw an increase in the price of used cars and trucks go up by 40%. And people are really struggling. They need cars to go get groceries, go to work, what have you.
All right, I need to make this 100% clear. So car thefts are dramatically up. People are not stealing cars to engage in their day-to-day lives and drive to work. In fact, disproportionately, a lot of these car thefts are happening with teenagers. They're doing it for fun, and they're also doing it due to a lack of consequences. this is the most stupid thing I've ever heard. But apparently, we can't deal with car theft, we can't deal with rape or murder or any of these other crimes until we figure out why people have to pay for cars, until we figure out why housing is so expensive. What you need, if you're a serial rapist, is a nice two-bedroom cottage. You know, maybe a washer and dryer in the unit. That will be absolutely swell, and that will stop you from committing the rape, you know, because you're an innocent angel Aladdin who's just raping in order to feed your starving family due to the price of housing and the fact that you have to pay for cars.
Well, so many people have to pay for cars. Why so many people have to struggle for housing? Why so many people have to be this poor and immiserated in their societies is what leads to these individual circumstances that people want to mention on the local news. It's true. There's nothing that doesn't flow downstream from those structural issues.
And I'm not joking about that. This idiot just said there's nothing that doesn't flow down from those systemic structural issues. So rapists, possibly they're doing it because cars are so expensive. I don't know if you know that. As soon as the inflation number go up, the rape go up because people need to pay for their groceries.
The microcosm of the quote George Floyd effect versus the pandemic effect is exactly that. It is the George Floyd effect has come from the let's pathologize people who are critical of cops, whereas the COVID thing is, yeah, there's structural things that are crushing people and driving bad behavior that we don't want to see from desperate individuals.
So yeah, the George Floyd effect is supported by the data. Again, to the week of George Floyd, we can actually see the homicide spiking. This is also supported by the Ferguson effect, which was written about prior to that after the Michael Brown hoax. And we also have multiple data sets that show us that whenever these consent decrees are put on specific police departments, we do in fact see an uptick in crime. Now, to be clear, that doesn't mean that each and every one of the consent decrees that are instituted against each and every one of these police departments isn't justified, isn't necessary in order to induce reform. It just acknowledges the fact that there are consequences to these changing attitudes against police. There are consequences to these changes in policy, but these people don't want to address that because we have to stop the rapists from raping by making sure they don't have to pay for their cars anymore.
The one about pathologizing people is purely good for real estate interests and cops. And those interests are very powerful in this country. And so I don't think they need us to speak for them. I think we need to challenge that because, you know, we see the type of country that being...
So just to be clear, the nonprofits that end up backing up the ideologies that these people push are completely unaccountable. They end up getting tons of money. In fact, there was recently an audit that talked about the $24 billion the state of California put into the homelessness crisis, and there's no accountability for that. All the time, we see the programs that these people push, like Thrive New York, the mental health initiative that Bill de Blasio gave nearly $1 billion to his wife for. The money just goes missing because you have a good cause, something for people to say, wow, I'm proud of supporting that, but the follow-through is absolute trash. So the idea that, oh, it's just, we're the innocent angels, we're fighting against the machine, when we see the proof in the pudding is in the taste, but unfortunately, it's been stolen and there's no receipt for it, because that's what always happens when these buffoons get their initiatives through, and then they pretend, they have the gall, the audacity to say, you've never actually tried our real ideas, you never actually tried giving a rapist a Porsche to see if he would stop raping. Now, look, I hope I gave you guys an adequate presentation of what they said, of their argument, of their perspective, versus me actually combating that with facts, numbers, data, information, so that you guys can make your own decision. As usual, the sources for this video are in the description of this video, and if you like it, you can show them by leaving a like. Subscribe for more content, follow me on my social media, support me via the support links in the description of this video. This has been me making fun of the rage over at the Majority Report. Till next time.